All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Joining me on the line tonight is Emily Yukis, an independent animator and artist who was recently fired from her job as a result of media coverage of her attendance at the latest NPI conference in Washington, D.C. Emily, welcome to the program. How are you this evening?
Hey, man, I'm excellent. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I know, once all this drama happened after the NPI conference, you were probably getting hit up by everyone to be on their podcast. So
Yeah, it was a whirlwind, and it still is kind of like a whirlwind. For a while there, it was like, ooh, overdrive.
Yes, I can imagine, and I believe you. To get started, I'm sure most people that are listening to this are you know, pretty familiar with your situation and what happened after the NPI conference. But just to get started, could you kind of just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and maybe your education?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is south central PA. It's the capital. And it, like, in the valley, kind of. So it was a diverse enough area. I went to a school that was like 40% Black and Asians, and we had a lot of Jews at the school, and of course the Jews were rich and lived up on the mountains, but you never put the two and two together when you're a kid. And then I moved to Philadelphia in 2008 to go to Temple University, which of course was 10 times more diverse. It's smack dab in the middle of the hood, and I've been living in the bowels of the Philly hood ever since. And I think that kind of led to my racial awakening.
Gotcha. You know, I've actually been to Harrisburg last just this past February, so almost a year ago. And it's a pretty interesting town. It's it's actually a lot cooler than I was anticipating.
What were you anticipating?
Well, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest, but it was it had a decent little downtown. I got to go out a couple nights, and it was cool.
Yeah,
it was a cooler town than I was expecting, put it that way.
Yeah. I was going to say, you probably weren't expecting much then. We got a good mix there of country and city, so you can drive a little bit, you're in the city. I'm from, like, the suburbs on the mountain. You drive a little bit in the other direction, you're in straight fields and bumfuck. And we do have, like, a lot of, you know, other than Philly, it's all pretty much, you know, white working class in PA. It's pretty based. I mean, right across the shore, across the river is where you get all the Republicans. I was on the East Shore, the Republicans and, you know, the Amish and the Klan and the Methods were on the other side. A good mix of, you know, like, you know, rich, well-to-do Republicans and good old bumfuck white people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, how did you get into animation? Is it something that you've always kind of done on the side and been interested in?
Well, I wanted to do it ever since I was 5, and I would throw these temper tantrums because I just wanted to animate so bad, and I attempted it when I was 5 and got my mom to photograph these little drawings that I did. And, you know, throughout my life, the technology wasn't really available, so it was really frustrating until I was like 11 and I got a little camera thing and I started being able to kind of do stop motion type things with the drawings. And then I got Macromedia Flash when I was 14, and that's where it all really, you know, that's when I really could animate finally.
Cool. Now, you're pretty much dedicated to doing that full-time now, I understand?
Yeah, it's actually been great. I'm kicking myself now a little bit because I could have done this, like, before. I could have gone full-time and said, you know, screw the Phillies, like, a while ago. I mean, but the Patreon has been, like, booming ever since I got fired and ever since I got all these great new alt-right fans. I mean, you guys are generous. You guys are more generous than any of my old fans, let me tell you. It's been great. I mean, as long as they don't shut the Patreon down, I'm going to be doing well. I'm going to be doing pretty good. And, you know, I only get paid per cartoon segment because, you know, I could do monthly, but I don't feel right about doing, you know, I like get motivation and go faster. And I like to get paid when I have a finished product. So I'm going to do it every cartoon segment, which is every 2 to 7, 8 months. But I'm also going to do every 2 to 3 live skits. So, you know, like the Wizard of Paws, the Oh Holy White's Divine, the Christmas special. I got paid for those two combined. So, yeah, as long as they don't kick me off Patreon, and even if they do, I can just set up my own website and be like, hey, this is, you know, the same thing. Just here's the PayPal each month. I can make a new one if I have to. And just email everybody when it's that time. So I'm not worried at all.
Well, good. I'm really glad to hear that. I'll post a link over to your Patreon page, which has more information about all this and kind of your background and history in, you know, doing animations. And, you know, people, I'd really encourage people to support you. One thing, you know, I wanted to mention is your recent holiday videos, the Donald baby. And then the other one, Oh White's Divine, those were awesome. I thought those were so great.
Oh, I hope they warmed your heart.
Yes, yeah, they did. I was like singing. I was like singing Donald Baby in my head after I heard it already.
Yeah, well, as you know, Donald Baby was written by the extremely talented genius Walt Bismarck, who I only discovered a couple months ago, and you know he does the alt-right Disney parodies. And, you know, it's the best way to deliver red pills in the form of an animated humorous musical. And, you know, he makes it 10 times funnier, obviously. That's the way they go down, really. So that's what I'm trying to do with these little musical numbers. Just like a song and some humor and some effects really goes a long way in dropping these red pills.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been following his channel for, gosh, at least a year, I want to say. And yeah, he does a lot of really good work. It's really interesting how all these very talented and creative people are kind of coming out of the woodwork and, you know, really putting out some good content now.
I know. He says he wants to come back and have another resurgence of videos. All artists kind of do that. They go away and then they come back. This is the best time ever to come back for alt-right vids.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious, could you kind of talk about your, you know, red pill process and how you sort of awoke to the reality of race and, you know, Jewish supremacy in America and I guess the wider Western world. And I mean, just the reality of white genocide, of the fact that white people, white lands are being invaded, overrun. We have governments that are actively seeking to displace us and discriminate against us and, you know, working, you know, totally contrary to our interests. So what was your, you know, sort of red pill process like?
Well, isn't that insanity that it's been going on this whole time and none of us had a damn clue? Or most of us didn't?
I know. It's insane.
It's because we assume that the whole world is just white and that black people and everything, they're minorities everywhere. I think that's what people just automatically assume in their brain because they happen to be from America and white, naturally white countries.
You know, real quick before you get started, one thing that I'll say is that in my, you know, sort of my experience, I never even thought about race. I never had a racial identity. I never really thought in racial terms. I mean, I knew that there was a difference between black people and whites or Mexicans or whatever, but I never thought it was important, you know. I never really thought much about it until I sort of, you know, woke up to some of these other issues.
Oh wow! Well, I was always obsessed with race. That's the crazy thing about me. I was always obsessed with race my whole life. Well, I'll start from the beginning with the whole red pilling process. When I was in high school, I was 16, I suddenly got obsessed with World War II and Hitler and Stalin. And I would just go down to the library and get out a fuckload of Stalin books about communism and Bolshevism and Leon Trotsky's My Life. I read his autobiography and a bunch of Hitler books. And of course, the public library didn't have any of the good materials. All the Hitler books were like the hidden Hitler about how Hitler was gay and like just stuff like that to make him look bad. And you know, this was before the internet was good. So I only had dial up. It would take hours to load a YouTube video. So I don't even know if they had these Connie videos on YouTube in 2008. Did they have these, Holohoax videos yet? I don't even know, but all I have,
not certainly not to the extent that they are today.
Yeah. So I would just get all these books, go home and research them all, and really, it's like now, like this is the, it's like a resurgence of that, just becoming obsessed with the history. And, you know, I came to the conclusion early on that the communists were Jews, and this was, you know, you couldn't really get around it. I always made fun of Trotsky for being a little Jew, and I always made fun of the communists for being hippies, and I always knew communism was stupid right off the bat. Like I was liberal, and to the point where I didn't follow current politics or had any clue about that, you know, and was a pussy, but I was never like a Marxist or anything like that. I knew right off the bat that communism was a pipe dream, long lost ideal, you know, treated people like dogs, you know, you get on the dole, you lose your soul, all that stuff. So, you know, I wanted to love Hitler and I loved the old parades, but I knew that I couldn't. And they tricked me into thinking any good, charismatic, wonderful leader is automatically a corrupt murderer, and you're never going to have a great leader. Okay, so, but even before that, when I was like 11 or 12, I was a self-hating white person. Like, they got me so early. I hated my skin color. I was like from a young age, I knew I was a bastard. Like, my grandparents were purebred Northern Italians from the Alps, and there was just always this level of shame and disconnect from them. When I went to visit, I always felt inferior, and I always felt like I was devoid. You know, my mom always praised them and their Italian culture. Of course, she never learned Italian or taught me it or anything. It was a dialect, the Piedmontese dialect. So it wasn't real. It was a northern dialect. But I just felt this vast hole in my soul. Why can't I have a culture? Why can't I? You know, these were very vivid thoughts in my brain that haunted me when I was 11 or 12. Why can't I? I don't have any roots. Stupid white people. We don't have anything. And of course, coming from a diverse school, they shoved the Jew-made rap media garbage down my throat. And I ate it the fuck up because I, you know, came from a kind of a broken home and I didn't have any sort of real roots. So I had to latch on to whatever they gave me. This was the only thing I had. So, you know, I like loved rap and everything. And I thought black people were great and I wanted to be a gangsta and shit. And, yeah, isn't that sad? I was like the perfect little, I was what the Jews wanted. I was like their ideal little specimen, you know, break their family, their culture, separate them from their grandparents.
Right.
Even the black gangster culture.
I mean, that's bound to happen when you don't have an identity, when you're not allowed to have an identity. That's bound to happen. I mean, it's happened to, you know, countless young children, young white children anyways, all across the country. It's very sad.
I know. It's a known phenomenon. That's like how you get the Uyghur phenomenon. And on top of that, I was like, you know, kind of like a poor kid. I was on the poorer side. I was ostracized by everybody. So I always wanted to, you know, look good and, you know, wear like chains and shit and like bling and like make people think I like had money and stuff and like good clothes and all that shit. And I remember like just hating myself so much for being white and for oppressing everyone. And this was at 11 or 12, and it continued up until 14 when I, you know, I got over the sort of gangster bullshit, but I still, you know, didn't have a culture and didn't have anything to latch on to, you know, that vast emptiness. So I went to college and, you know, there were the race question, you know, started coming at me again because I was surrounded by the hood and you would step one block off of the campus and you were literally in a death zone and you could feel the air change. It would get really eerie. Have you ever stepped into the deep dark hood and felt the energy change?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and believe it or not, there's actually a significant black population there. And it's one of the most violent and, you know, poorest black populations. Probably not the most, but it's definitely up there. It's pretty rough. And, you know, I went to school, my high school was probably, oh, I'd say between 35 and 45% black. I mean, I went to school with like a ton of black kids.
Oh,
I played football with black kids. You know, I had black friends. Not so many Mexicans, but lots of blacks and some Jews. I always knew there was something up with the Jews. You know, they were always so smart and well-connected and rich. And, like, they stuck together and they had clearly, like, a unique identity and you know, purpose in life. You know, they had a... Mm-hmm. They were always tied to their community and always, you know, doing things and doing Jewish things and whatnot. So I always, you know, kind of was not necessarily, you know, hostile to them, but I just knew something was up with the Jews. And I had some Jewish friends, like I mentioned. But again, I mean, I never really thought too deeply about race. I never recognized the significance of it. You know, it was just something that I didn't really think about until much later in life.
Yeah, same. Like, I hated myself and everything, but I still thought this is just the norm. This is, of course, diversity was all I knew. This is all there is. Goy. Yeah, there is. There's always something with the Jews, right?
I always joke
that, you know, on Christmas, you want to go look at Christmas lights. And so you go to the big, nice houses. But the thing is, most of them are Jewish houses, so they don't have any lights. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But, interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead if you want to continue. I was gonna ask. You know what role? Because from what I understand, I've heard you on other podcasts. I recently listened to you and Lana, your podcast with her, mm-hmm. and I think you had mentioned that you really started connecting all the dots and becoming much more cognizant of race and having a strong white identity. Really, largely through the election and through Trump and, sort of discovering the alt-right on the internet and, some of these ideas. Is that pretty much correct?
Yeah, that's what did it. I mean, before, like, race was such a huge thing and I was so guilty. Like, for all those years, I thought the hood was my fault and I would walk around the streets with just this huge weight of guilt and I felt like everyone hated me. I couldn't leave the house without it. It was like, it was torture. And I lived in, like, some of the most destitute places, too. So I felt, bad looking, like, any sort of decent. And, of course, like, I get hollered at and all that. And I know women like to blame it on white men. But you know it's all black and Mexican men that are hollering at you. White girls, you know it. So I would just walk around. Up until the election, I had just this insurmountable guilt that was just – it was the zenith. Especially like the Black Lives Matter, like I believed that shit for a little bit. Isn't that funny? But Trump really, like, the Trump was the catalyst to get me, something clicked again, like it did in high school. And I also felt like I was intellectually dying. Like I had no sort of, nothing to research. I had no history to study, no great figures to idolize other than stupid entertainers. Not saying all entertainers are stupid, but, Zog, media, bullshitters. I was, like, lost. I was a lost, lost little girl. And then the Trump election, I remember thinking, who's this? This guy looks stupid. Donald Trump is dumb. And this was, like, what, like, October 2015? And about November, I started down the conspiracy road, got to the Rothschilds. Got to the Jews in February, and I was like, oh, it is the Jews, but I called them Zionists, and it was really finding pull. Like, people say, it's so gradual, but really, once you're there, and I got hooked right away. I was on there for, 7-9 hours a day out on pull when I first got on there. I couldn't get enough. I remember, like, the ideas started to hurt me they triggered me at first. Ooh. Especially, like, the stuff about women.
Okay.
And that got to me first. Now I love what they say about women. It's the best. It's the truly empowering stuff. So, I mean, not the ones that are like murder the women or whatever, I'm talking about, like, right, the real commentary, not just 4chan shit, but,
Interesting. So you really kind of woke up rather quickly and just delved into all of this and wanted to kind of get to the bottom of everything?
Yeah, pretty much. I wanted to get to the truth. I wanted to get to the center of the alt-right when I first started hearing that word, I think around April or May. I first heard that phrase for the first time. And I was like, I gotta find the scented.
Right.
I had to sniff out the center, and I don't think I knew what I was getting into in the first place. Like, sometimes I, like, fantasize about going back to those X-tier days, you know, like the conspiracy tier days, just thinking about reptilians and good old aliens and the Rothschilds, and those were fun, right? It's not, like, all raw you know, because you could say that stuff to your friends and just be like, okay, Emily, and it's not like the ideas now where you say it to your friends and then they cut you off forever.
Yeah, I totally hear you. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you've followed anything that I've done online or any podcasts I've done or anything. I've been doing this for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember being in college and I've always been interested in history and politics and whatnot. And when I was in college, you know, my interest in these subjects only increased on a daily basis, but I wasn't exposed really to any of this alternative information. It was basically just sort of mainstream stuff. But I was, you know, so interested in it all. I read everything. I read the New York Times, you know, front to back daily practically. And, you know, I was really into all this stuff. And, it was the Wall Street bailout in 2009, I think. And, it was right when I was getting ready to graduate college. And I remember just being so pissed about that. You know, here we have all these crooked bankers that just openly, like, even reported in the New York Times, for example, that these people are, you know, just criminals and they've defrauded all these people and the government bailed them out. That was what really kind of made me jaded and just very skeptical of the media and of the political establishment. And from there, it only increased. And I started researching 9/11. That's actually a topic I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if you've if you've researched 9/11 at all. It's kind of like a, for whatever reason, it's kind of like a taboo subject in the alt-right, which is very sad in my opinion, because I think 9/11 is, you know, sort of a central thing that has defined the past 16, I mean, since it happened, so, you know, this entire century. It's really like the defining paradigm of, you know, of certainly of our foreign policy, of the way American foreign policy is formulated. It's 9/11 is the paradigm. The evil Muslims attacked us. And, you know, I remember, you know, that was really my big wake-up call, was researching 9/11, and I came to the realization, and I think that this is very, very, very well-founded and very, very well-proven at this point, that it was the damn Jews who did 9/11. It was certainly not the Muslims.
Yeah, yet again. Oh, my. I know.
Well, that was my, that was my big,
one of my stepping stones, too, is 9/11 was one of my big ones. And that, like, I remember my mindset back then, it was like, you would say this and everyone would be like, you could say something as little as 9/11 is a lie and they'd think you were fucking, whoa, way out there, man, that's cuckoo. And it's cuckoo. And, you know, of course I would jump back and forth between, it's George Bush, it's the Muslims, it's the Jews. You'd always go back and forth. I went back and forth between it's the Muslims and it's the Jews for a while, and then I realized that they were working together and it's ultimately the Jews, because the Muslims wouldn't be doing anything unless the Jews were letting them do it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, 9/11 is, it's so obvious that the government story, the government conspiracy theory is just so baseless and ridiculous. If you take even 5 minutes and just think about what they're telling you, I mean, it's fucking insulting, really, is what it is. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that was kind of my big thing. And then, you know, I once I realized it was clearly the Jews who did 9/11, and, you know, I don't even want to get into all the details with it. It's just, I've talked about it, written about it, you know, people can go back in the in the archives and check it out if they're sort of new to this. But that led me to revisionism. And questioning the Holocaust and reading Mein Kampf. And I read Mein Kampf and I was like, holy shit, this dude was right about fucking everything.
Yeah, I read it in high school. I got it out of the library and walked around with it. And, you know, that was back then when you could do that and they wouldn't put you in jail. But I need to read it again. I really do.
It's so brilliant. It's so insightful. It's so powerful. I mean, it really is amazing that we aren't reading this in college. I mean, this is like the most insightful political, economic, social, cultural analysis I've read in my entire life. And it's so spot on. I mean, I don't think there's really much that I could disagree with. I mean, it's so incredible. And what's even amazing about it, you know, looking back on it and doing more research, is what Hitler was saying in Mein Kampf. Most of it had already been said before, and even American thinkers were writing about these subjects. And it really wasn't even that controversial at the time. It was just sort of, you know, well known, at least in sort of, you know, right, quote unquote, right wing circles. But, you know, for people like us who are grown up in this modern Jewish controlled world, we're not even allowed to entertain these ideas.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. And the Holohoax one was one of the finalist pills for me and one of the hardest ones to swallow. I mean, I became racially aware. That was an easier one than the Holohoax. And, you know, I'm still even learning now, like about it. Cause, you know, I made the full leap to the, you know, the racial question and acknowledging the JQ without any shame about 3 months ago. So I'm just, you know, still tackling this Holohoax. And, you know, the more you do the research, the more it gets disproven. The more you don't do the research, the more you're on the fence about it. Well, maybe you're being crazy. Maybe you lost it. You know, every time you hear yourself say that to yourself, just do a little bit more research and prove it again.
Suffice it to say, none of it is true at all. I mean, in virtually every single respect, the whole entire story this is the most amazing thing. It's just like 9/11. Literally what the government and media expect us to believe and what they tell us is almost the exact opposite on virtually every single aspect, in every single mm-hmm. aspect. It mm-hmm. wasn't the Germans who organized a genocide of the Jews. It was the Jews in the West of the Germans, and they openly said it. I mean, that's what's so amazing to me is there's books. A guy, Theodore Kaufman, comes to mind. He was a Jew in America back in, you know, the 30s, and I think it was the early 30s he wrote this book. He wrote a book called Germany Must Perish, arguing that we needed to literally genocide the German race. And, I mean, we had people in our own government, in the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration, who were formulating policies and carrying out policies at the end of the war that were designed to genocide Germans. So, I mean, it's so insane how totally opposite everything is. And what the Jews have done, and this is something maybe you can comment on, and in my experience, you know, these are the most difficult subjects to talk to, like, average people about, to talk to your friends about, to talk to your family about, you know, to talk to anybody about, really. Because they're so, it's so emotional. You know, we have been traumatized psychologically and emotionally exploited by all of this Holocaust propaganda. And when once you see it, you see through it, you see how truly evil these people are. And they are absolutely evil. I mean, the way they can go on with this and continue, we still are paying them, you know, these quote unquote Holocaust survivors. It's the biggest scam that it's almost like it blows your mind. You can't even wrap your head around how big of a damn scam it is.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, that's why no one wants to touch it, is because once you pull one of these threads, then the whole thing comes unraveled. Then there is no solid grounds of reality anymore. It is all a lie. I know how, like, my normie friends like to say, it's all a lie, man. It's the media is just lying to you, man. I'm like, yes, they are. For instance, the Holocaust, and then they're like, no, not those kind of lies. No, you know,
right? Yeah,
that's where you're going too far.
Yeah,
you know, man. I mean, I've just been figuring it out more and more, and the more I do, the more I do the research, the more it gets proven to me. And this is one of the things that I've gone pretty hardcore on Twitter. I've said some pretty jarring things, but I still haven't said anything about how the Holocaust isn't real yet.
Just do it. You've gone far enough anyways.
I
you may as well be a Holocaust denier too.
I crashed this plane with no survivors, dude. I went, yeah.
I mean, at least to the outside world,
that's what they see. I went right into the towers and blew my life up.
You know what? I do want to talk about that, you know, your experience, you know, going public with all this stuff, because, you know, I've been saying everything I've been saying for years now, using my real name, and there have been some very serious consequences in my life. But before we do that, picking back up on this fake Holocaust story, you know, and I've done quite a bit of research into this and you know, read a bunch of books, watched a bunch of videos, written about it pretty extensively. And really the conclusion that I've come to is not only that is it literally the exact opposite of what we've been told, you know, sort of what we just previously discussed, but also that the entire anti-white paradigm that we operate under, the white genocide agenda, is based on the fake Holocaust story in the official narrative of World War II, you know, which alleges that Hitler was this evil maniac that was a white supremacist and wanted to kill all the Jews and he hated non-whites. Of course, none of that is true, but the entire, you know, anti-white agenda is based on this false story. So I don't know.
Since they use that fake genocide to legitimize their genocide.
Right, right. I mean, it is, and I don't know if you'd agree with that. Maybe you do, but is the fake Holocaust and revisionism and you know, telling the truth about Hitler, is this a subject that, you know, people that care about white people, people that are in the alt-right, is this a subject that can be avoided or downplayed or ignored, in your opinion?
I think people will try and ignore it as long as they can. And, you know, I've tried to ignore it too. And, you know, just as I tried to ignore the race thing for a while and say, we can all just be, you know, civic nationalism. That's cool. MAGA hats and memes. You know, that I was like that for a couple months. But, you know, you can't. You know, it's like, I'm trying to think of a really good analogy. It's like trying to stitch up a wound that has just a huge, there's a huge tumor inside, and all you're doing is stitching up the outer skin, but this tumor is still growing, and that's the tumor of the accumulated lies of history. So if you say, oh, I really care about white people, I'm fighting for the white race, but then you're ignoring the history that is in fact causing our depletion, then no, I don't think you can really go there 100%. Maybe to get some normies in the white movement, you don't have to go there right off the bat. And you can still say, like, just white pride. You know, you don't have to bring up Hitler just yet. You know, I'm proud to be a white person. You know, just, like, you gotta give these people baby steps. I mean, it was hard enough for us with our open minds able to be, you know, we were able to explode the traumas that the Jews implemented on us from day one and the guilt. So it was hard even for us and for me. And just imagine these normies. But yeah, no, for yourself, you got to acknowledge it. I think that's like the final thing that tied it all together for me, really, is beginning to swallow this hollow hoax pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I really don't think we could ever, you know, get out of this mess and get our societies, you know, going back in the right direction, in a much more healthy direction. We could never, for example, have a white ethno state.
No, if what? You don't believe in the ethno state?
No. I'm saying we can't do that. I don't think that we could ever achieve those goals without addressing literally the weaponization of our history. Our historical narrative has been weaponized by Jews to delegitimize white interests, to delegitimize, you know, the idea that white people have interests, that we have a unique identity, that we have, you know, any interests at all. You know, it is a weapon, and I don't think that we could ever, we can't avoid this. Is basically what I'm trying to say is it's unavoidable, and regardless, and this is a point that Anglin makes all the time, and I totally agree with him. If you even say that you're pro-white, you're going to be called a damn Nazi anyways. So rather than backing down from it, you may as well just say, you know what? I've looked into Hitler. I've read Mein Kampf. I've done my research. The guy was right. Okay, fuck off. I mean, what do you want me to say? You know, I mean, I don't think, like, being weak about this and being defensive and saying, oh no, well, you know, I believe in the Holocaust and, you know, Hitler was evil. It's like, dude, come on. Like, we got to get over that.
I know, dude. Any sense of, like, cucking or bending or anything is just completely futile. There's no way you can appease them. You literally cannot. You can't even say, yes, I am not ashamed to be white without being called a Nazi. So yeah, that's why I've been owning it. That's why I've been heiling all over the internet. And, you know, I've been using Hitler themes and heiling imagery, you know, for 10 years. I didn't have the conclusions that I did now, obviously. But so it wasn't too unnatural for me. It kind of just really came naturally as a natural evolution from 10 years ago when I first started getting obsessed about all this. Perhaps if I would have continued on the path and not gone to college and, well, had better internet, I would have arrived at these conclusions sooner. But I think everything happens in the timeline that it's supposed to. And, yeah, man, no pussyfooting around. I've learned that. And sometimes I always say, cause, you know, I have my moments of doubt all the time. I'm sure it's much easier for you doing this for years, but it's really been like 3 months for me. And it's just like, I have all these times where I'm like, you're being too harsh. What are you doing? You can't just say all these things. You can't just go right on out there and do all and go like this hard. And it's like, no, I'm probably not even going hard enough, honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I got on David Duke this morning. I've been
going
fucking hard. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's all uploaded on my channel if you guys want to check it out.
Cool. I listen to his show pretty regularly. He's great. He's a legend. I mean, this guy's been fighting for this cause for, you know, pretty much his whole life, and I got nothing but respect for him.
I know.
And you know, the thing about, you know, World War II and revisionism and Hitler, it's not as if we don't have all of the proof and evidence and facts on our side. You know what I mean? It's not as if we can't prove everything we're saying. I mean, you know, I think some people, you know, obviously know more about it and could probably explain these things better than others. But yeah. I mean, you know, do some basic research, have some basic talking points, and again, like you said, don't cuck on these subjects. You know, if somebody calls you a Nazi, say, you know, what do you mean by that? Because I'm white and because I care about white people, and you know, I mean, I don't know, that was a topic I wanted to bring up, and I think, you know, you answered it very well, and I obviously completely agree with you. I just think it's such a huge topic, and it's, again, it's something that we really can't avoid. We need to be at a point where in like the next 5 years we're teaching classes about the fake Holocaust, you know, and
it's gonna get rewritten.
We have to do that. I mean, there's no other way around it. They've built a freaking industry around this fake story. The government gives them money for their museum in D.C. and all over the country. They have, like, these Holocaust museums all over the country, all over the world.
It's insanity.
I mean, it's so crazy.
It's so funny. The more you think about it, it's so fucking, it's so convoluted.
It's so outrageous to me. I mean, it's like, this gets my blood boiling,
but
these
Jews.
But it makes
sense, nonetheless. Everything really makes more sense, doesn't it? It all makes a lot more sense, doesn't it, once you go back over your life and think of it this way. Because, you know, you watch those Hitler videos and everyone's having the time of their lives. I mean, they're the most healthy people you've ever seen. They have sparkles in their eyes. They have souls. The land is beautiful. They're happy. They're working together. They have a cohesive bond that I've never, ever experienced in my life. You know, you go on the subway and you see these people, they're dead inside. They're all dead. The life is gone. They beat it all out of us. Everyone's looking down at the ground on the subway. Everyone's doesn't want to look at each other. Their eyes are down. And I've always thought this for years. Is this how it has to be? This can't be how it has to be. The only time I've seen any alternative to this is freaking Nazi Germany. Where he was able to bring these people back and rise them up from their ashes of being beaten from the communists, give them soul and spirit. Like, can you imagine having the people have spirit? I never knew any sort of, like just to see that their bond, their the bond of the country, of the nation, of the people, this, because we're so isolated now. Everyone knows this. Everyone knows these problems. They just don't realize that there is an alternative. And if you say, Nazi Germany, look at them. They all look pretty happy, don't they? Then they're like, no. You can only have that if you're murdering a bunch of Jews. Otherwise, you know, being ashamed is a natural state.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Everything, once you wake up to a lot of these issues, you know, maybe especially the, you know, revisionism and the truth about World War II and Hitler, you know, things really do make all the sense in the world. Your whole life, you can look back and just see how you've been lied to about pretty much everything. Have you seen The Greatest Story Never Told, that documentary?
Yeah, I mean,
gosh, what a brilliant film that is. My goodness. I remember watching that, you know, and I was already pretty, you know, awake to the truth about Hitler. And, you know, I had read Mein Kampf and, you know, interviewed people about the subject and read a ton of books about it and whatnot. And still I watched that and I was like literally crying, you know, watching that. Like just,
it made me cry.
I can't
too.
Believe we've been lied to about this. It's so, oh my gosh, it's just so sad to me. And again, you know, in the next, maybe not 5 years, but before it's said and done, you know, we need to be teaching history courses about how great Hitler was and about how the Holocaust was just a fraud that these filthy...
And how he
filthy...
fought on the wrong side and Churchill was a Rothschild puppet. And,
yes.
And that was how that's how everything started going downhill. And yeah, I think it's going to happen because at the way, ever since Trump won, and even before that, like the window has been shifting at such a massive rate. To the right, like never before. And
yeah,
so in a couple of years.
There's definitely a lot of people that seem to have, you know, become aware of a lot of these subjects and be and have been willing to talk about white issues, for example. And I think Trump has played a huge role in this, although I don't think that was his intent. I don't think that Trump is a white nationalist. I mean, I'm sort of like, you know, I supported Trump and I found him very, you know, frankly, inspiring. I think he's a great leader and I think he has a lot of potential. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't think that he's going to rescue the white race, certainly. I mean, this guy is in bed with Jews. He's a major Zionist. He's disavowed the alt-right numerous times. We could go on and on about it. But I think it's bigger than him. I think it's really what I like about the alt-right, what I respect and admire about the alt-right, especially guys like Richard Spencer and David Duke and Andrew Anglin, and the guys at TRS, is they've really seized this opportunity and just injected all of these ideas into the discourse. And it's been just amazing to watch. It's been a long time coming. We've been waiting for an opportunity like this. And I'm just so glad that these guys have been able to seize this moment and really just cause this huge spectacle and piss all these people off. I mean, I'm just laughing my ass off. Looking at these trolls, you know, troll these journalists and whatnot, is so damn funny and is so great. I love it.
It's really the humor that's really pushing it through. I'm telling you, that's what Anglin says all the time. I think that's why he likes me so much. But yeah, man, if it wasn't for the humor and how funny everything is and just the absurd situation of how it's all coming out, that's the only thing that's really keeping me going, man. Because otherwise, like, you know, getting cut off from everyone, ostracized, like getting death threats and not being like, you know, I have to watch my back every time I leave the house now. I'm like, and, you know, everyone's, you know, Christmas was, oh God. But you know, throughout it all, it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. It's been very effective. And, you know, I think also being very extreme, this is also something that Anglin's really been arguing for quite a long time, and I totally agree. You know, we got to be extreme. We can't back down on some of these issues, especially as it relate to Hitler and Nazis.
Yeah.
And I think it's I think it's been proven to be very effective, right? I mean, it's not like we're not getting media coverage or people aren't coming on, you know, waking up to our ideas. It's the total opposite. We're getting tons of media coverage, and
they,
you know,
want
more
to
and
hear
more
it.
Yeah, more and more people are waking up and realizing that we're right about this stuff.
Yeah, dude, it's amazing. Oh, man, wait. Oh, man, I forgot what I was going to say.
Fuck. Well,
we can't cuck, because the more you cuck and you're like, oh, well, maybe Hitler wasn't that good of a person, the more you're sounding like you're evil. Because if you say, oh, if you're shaky about it, then you're admitting that maybe there was a genocide, then you are advocating for a genocide. But if you stick to your convictions and you said, no, it was a lie, Hitler did nothing wrong. If you stick to that, that there was nothing that happened that you have to be shaky about, then, you know, that's what you got to do. It's really been the whole thing that's tied it all together for me. It's like dipping your foot into this taboo pool of water. You know, it's like, it's cold and you got to warm up and warm up. I'm just excited for next year when, because at this rate, who knows where I'm going to be next year? Like, geez, it'll probably also be so solidified in me that I won't have these periods of self-doubt anymore. I won't have to go through this. I mean, yeah, you've been doing it so, for so long. I don't know how you got through it for so long without this, without the surge of the movement. Because like I got started when it was surging, and I had that, and it was so hard. I can't imagine going through all these years knowing all these things, and not having like a great thing to back you up on it. That must have been rough.
You know what? It has been. I'll tell you, it's been tough. I mean. And especially, and this is something maybe you can comment on too. Like, I basically just started a blog, right? I mean, I just started a website, you know, shortly after I graduated college. And, you know, I was researching 9/11 and posting stuff about 9/11. And once I figured out it was the Jews behind it, I started posting information about Jews. And next thing I know, I'm learning about Hitler and learning the Holocaust isn't true. And I'm writing about this and saying these things publicly on my website and doing radio shows, and started writing for a newspaper, American Free Press, and, you know, really kind of got into all this stuff. And, you know, I had no idea that it would come to this. I had no idea that, you know, I would lose two jobs, you know, as a result of simply expressing my opinions online, not even my opinions, but expressing facts and citing like Jewish sources. I mean, A big part of my website, you know, what I used to do, I mean, I really don't have time to do it anymore, just because I'm so busy working. But I mean, I used to just like highlight Jewish articles from the Jewish press, right? And I mean, it's like Jews do control the media, Times of Israel. It's like, it's amazing.
Time. Barbara Spector.
My God, I know.
It. It's like, do they have a magical, like wave of their voice that it's like a dog whistle? It goes right through human beings' ears that they just can't like comprehend it, that they're actually literally saying all the things that we're saying.
I know it's so incredible. It's really just, oh my God, again, mind-blowing. Like I don't even know how to process it. It's like, look, I'm literally quoting a Jew. I'm literally like citing and copying and pasting like an article from a Jewish newspaper where they're saying that, yes, we do control the media, where they're saying that, yes, the Holocaust is, you know, the big, not, they wouldn't say the biggest scam, but it's like a central part of Jewish identity and it's used to promote Jewish interests and all these things. And, you know, it's like, I'm citing these people and, you know, I'm getting in trouble for it. It's just so stupid. The whole thing is just so ridiculous.
I know. It just kind of, oh man, the hypocrisy. Woo. What a freaking bender. Yeah.
You got to just laugh at it. It's just ridiculous.
That's the only thing you can do, man. That's the only thing you can do when you get in these spirals. And that's why I think my new skit videos and all that are doing real, real good for it, because I know I watched it back. I was blackpilled on Christmas because my mom kind of like told me, like, you know, you kind of deserve to get attacked by commies and fired and stuff. And well, I've never really had too much support in that department anyway. But just watching Oh White's Divine, I would just watch it and it would cheer me up right away. And I'd watch it like 8 times. I love watching my own content though. I'm freaky like that. And I watch it back and, like I'm another person.
It is very, very good. It's great. And yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm glad that you're doing this stuff. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you because, you know, from the sounds of it, you really didn't, you know, plan on doing this or anticipate all the things that have happened to you, you know, because you went public and because, you know, you had this, I mean, really you just went outside and tried to talk to some of these, anti-white Antifa protesters at the at the NPI conference, right? And I mean, you had a pretty, you were well known in Philadelphia, from what I understand, you know, working at the stadium. And and I'd encourage people, if they're not familiar with your background, to check out, we did a Q&A that I published on my website. I'll link to that. That kind of gives you a background and it has some videos of you kind of explaining some of this stuff. But I'm just curious. I mean, number one, obviously, I'm assuming you didn't really anticipate, you know, being outed as like a Nazi, as like a white, you know, white nationalist.
Actually, I did. I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen eventually. I mean, even back in like April, when I first discovered the alt-right, I was like, I want to be a leader of the alt-right. I want to be like an alt-right waifu. I want to, and like, that was back when like Lauren Southern was cool. And I thought that was how far, that's how far it went, was fucking Lauren Southern and these e-celebs. And so I knew I wanted to. I didn't know what I was getting into, though. Now I am. Now I am at the epicenter of the alt-right. I got everything I wanted. I just don't think I realized how much suffering and pain, or just, you know, turmoil it would have put me through. How much I would have learned. I did not know in April how deep the rabbit hole went. I didn't know I would go this far into these dangerous ideas, but I had to. It was the only way, unless I just stopped researching altogether. And but I knew ever since I started coming out with the more taboo stuff, with the, you know, the first Gavin interview, well, the second Gavin interview, when I got him to say the 14 words and such, I'm like, this is all going to blow up on me. I know this is all going to come out. Pistachio Girl is a Nazi. This is all going to come out. There's no way it's not. And it tickled me to think about. It made me really happy to think about. On the one hand, it you know, scared me to death, like, oh, what could be worse than losing your job? And of course, I love this job, you know, because I love the fame and the masses, and I love doing commission and getting on TV and stuff like that, and getting good exercise. But, you know, I guess some part of me was just sick of it, or knew that it would be the perfect foothold to tie together to get to, like, as a jump off to skyrocket into the stratosphere with this shit. And I did, and it went much further than I expected. I didn't think it was going to happen this soon. If the communists didn't attack, they wouldn't have gotten the story. I wouldn't have gotten everywhere. So it was really the commie attack that spurred it in the first place, which I wasn't, I should have known better that they would have attacked me. But, you know, I went to the DNC and did that for like 4 days and nothing happened to me, but this was another level of vitriol. And yeah, but it couldn't have happened any better, like, than planned. Like, there really was no way to wait around. What was I going to do? Wait around another 2 months being like putting around, or trying to watch my words, just like waking up worrying, like, oh, are they going to fire me now? Are they going to fire me now? No, it's over with. I can fash out full time, just in time for the holidays. I mean, I think the timeline went perfectly. I skyrocketed up further than I thought. I got on CNN, Sports Illustrated, MLB.com, all the, you know, HuffPo, all the, you know, the standards, Daily Mail. It was like the Stature Girl, rabid white nationalist who thinks black people shouldn't be in America, which I never said. I just said,
of course.
I just said that white people built this country. If you're against African slavery, then you never think that, then you agree that we shouldn't have brought them over, and therefore you're for a white America. And, you know, if black people could have colonized America first, it would be theirs. But unfortunately, they never figured out boats. And that was, that was one of my harsher tweets that they featured. But yeah, then I got on Stephen Colbert. And, you know, once you get on Stephen Colbert, that's when you know you made it. And some guy imitated me, and it was really like a public lynching. Like, they took it as far
as
they could.
It was so lame. My God, it was so stupid. I watched it.
Example.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, you definitely did receive a ton of media coverage. My goodness.
Yeah, it was like, it was really intense. It was really intense for a while. I'd like wake up in the morning, kind of feel like I got like hit by a truck, because, you know, especially in the city, like, everybody freaking knows. Everybody. It went all the way back to Harrisburg. It got on Fox News, and of course they said I was a self-proclaimed white supremacist, which I still think I can sue over, because they never said I was a white supremacist.
Well, that was one thing I wanted to ask you, because obviously you're a very, you know, public figure in Philadelphia, right? I mean, you're sort of like an icon of the stadium, or you were.
I still am, even more now.
Even more infamous now. Yeah, I mean, what did your friends say? Like, what did, like, people that you know, like, have you like lost a lot of friends over this? Or like, what has been their reaction?
Oh yeah, more like what they didn't say. I've had people just chain, like, just make statuses about how they completely disavow me. Like, people I know like 8-9 years, and just say, this Emily is insane and I want nothing to do with her. And then they didn't even have a conversation with me. And, you know, I had a band and they all packed up. They came over, packed up all their shit and left, like, without a word. Even my only childhood remaining friend, like, called me just crying and crying. She still wants to be my friend, but she's like, I've known her since I was like 9, so I don't think it would be really fucked up for her to cut me off over that. But yeah, like the whole city and like the gayborhood knew who I was. So like the gayborhood went on this crazy, crazy rampage attack. There's like a Black Lives Matter Facebook page and it's like neo-Nazi Hitler worshiping KKK member Emily Yukis. It's like, are you doing your research, dude? Did I say I was a member of the KKK? I didn't. And this was even before I did the article with David Duke. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't go on Facebook for a while because I'd go on the timeline, start scrolling down, and it would be all my articles. Yeah, so everybody basically has cut me off at this point that I used to know. But it's funny because a lot of these people I didn't even talk to in years. I didn't give a fuck about. It's like, why are you suddenly care about me now, dude? I haven't talked to you in 5 years. These are like the burnouts from my college days who are just numbing themselves with alcohol, just doing the same bullshit that they have, especially the women. That's the saddest thing. You know, I'm 26 now. These women I go to school with, they're just drinking away their youth, waiting for their ovaries to dry up. They have no clue about their biology. They think, I'm sure when they hear me saying, oh, wow, I can have a family now. That's crazy. I do want to have kids one day. They're going to look at me like I'm a fucking insane. I lost it. I went off the deep end or something. It's like all these people didn't give a shit when I made my degenerate cartoons and did all this, you know, crazy fucked up shit artistically. Everyone's just like, oh, that's nice. As soon as I start talking about white identity and wanting to preserve my culture, then that was the final straw. It's just all hypocrisy. That's how we know how bad we've gotten, was when the degeneracy is worshipped, and when you actually try and break away from that and try and, you know, improve yourself and, you know, disavow this Jewy degenerate shit immoral culture, then that's when they turn on you.
Yeah, you know, in my experience, I mean, when I was first getting into 9/11, and, you know, I would go on Facebook and post articles that I wrote or post other articles that I found or whatever, and I would talk about 9/11, talk about Jews and you know, other issues, related issues. Pretty much all of, like, my close friends, what really bothered me was no one ever was like, oh, wow, John, that's interesting. Like, why do you think like that? You know, let's look into this. Let's talk about this. It was just either silence or, you know, outrage at me. You know, I'd get like nasty comments or nasty messages like, oh, what's up with you? Like, what happened? Well, you know, like, I'm like, somehow I'm wrong. Like, no one's even like dealing with what I'm saying or trying to even understand like where I'm coming from, or, you know, it was just like one of those things. Like, if I had a friend who started like saying something, you know, radical or something I'd never heard, I'd be like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Like, why do you think that? You know, let's talk about this. But, you know, obviously most people aren't like that. So that was kind of my experience. And then I just, like, you know, pretty much lost touch with pretty much all of my like close friends from like high school and college and whatnot. And then my most recent situation, when I was working for a city government out here in California, and as soon as I got let go, I mean, it was in the newspaper, and no one from the city, everyone just like cut me off. Like, no one even called or texted. One girl I worked with, she texted me, but like people I was like good friends with that I'd like hang out with, like, nothing. I was like, damn, I knew that was going to happen, because no one wanted to lose their job. And I mean, everyone that knew me, like, I didn't talk about this stuff at work, especially at the city. I mean, my gosh, I never said anything about any of this stuff. And everyone knew me as like this nice guy that, you know, was just an average person. Like, I never, you know, hinted at I was like a white nationalist or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, I think it probably shocked a lot of people, but of course, no one wanted to, no one wanted to jeopardize their position of, you know, potentially.
Well, I can see they didn't want to do it publicly, but like the fact that they can't even message you privately and say,
yeah, that was the thing.
They're just like the level. This is the level of slimy cowardice and disloyalty that this culture promotes.
It's sad. I mean, it's I guess to be expected, but it's very sad.
I knew it was gonna happen. I didn't think of. It's actually kind of nice because now I don't have all these motherfuckers hitting me up anymore. You know, I really like to do my own thing and be alone. And I can't talk to these people anymore. I can't have normal. It was getting to the point where when I did hang out with them, there was just this level of disconnect that was so great. And, you know, in my head, it was just like, you know, Deus Vult, race war now. It's the dude. Like,
yeah.
I couldn't concentrate on anything that they said. I don't care. I really don't care about anything else anymore. And I think most people that take this route, that's how it ends up. And, you know, in high school, I've had friend purges before. Like, none of this stuff's really new for me. I've been hated for a long time. I've been ridiculed and told I was, you know, a piece of shit for a while by a lot of people. Not so much as now. But I remember in high school when I started getting obsessed with Hitler and Stalin, I was just like, I can't be friends with these people anymore, man. They bore me, so... I guess I got rid of them in that case. They were also like dicks, but I had this little Jewish girlfriend that stuck around. I would run around in high school and I would like sing Springtime for Hitler in Germany at recess with her and stuff like that. And then she left too. So, I mean, it's just another cycle and I couldn't be more happy because losing these, you know, transient friends that maybe see once a year and have like just a boring drinking session where you try and reminisce about college, but you can't remember a damn thing because your brain's so screwed up. But now I have friends in history. I have a lot of new pals and people that I admire throughout history, like George Lincoln Rockwell and other
things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hear you. It's. I think it's pretty much the same for anybody that kind of goes down this route, you know? You just don't want to bullshit with people anymore. It's like, I don't want to talk about sports. I don't want to talk about an app on your stupid phone. I don't want to talk about a movie or a television show, you know?
I never wanted to anyway. I remember him
being
like, I can't take this shit, man. This is mind-numbing. What the fuck? But I didn't know there was any alternative. And now I have all the intellectual stimulation that I could have ever wanted. It's been amazing. My brain is growing again. Like, if I didn't find this movement, I would have died. My brain would have died. That's how it felt like before I found it. It was just an intellectual death, and that's what they want. That's what the Jews want. They want you to die a slow intellectual, spiritual, and moral death until you're a stump and you're old and no one gives a fuck about you anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, we agreed to do about an hour here on this podcast, and we're right at the hour. So mm-hmm. I want to wrap up here in just a second. Real quick, you were at the latest NPI conference, obviously, which is, you know, sort of what led to all this other drama with your job. What was it? Could you just talk about the conference real quick? I went to the one last fall, so fall 2015, and then I also went to the one in March. And I thought it was great. I thought Richard did a great job, great speakers, great people. So I'm curious, what was this this most recent one like?
Well, you know, the only cons I've been to before were like gaming or animation cons and stuff like that. And this was the first real con of substance where I felt I was really doing something. We were accomplishing something. And this was the most well-dressed convention I've ever been to. I remember one of the best moments was during Spencer's speech, the infamous Hailgate speech. And I remember feeling the inspiration in the room. It just reverberated around the whole thing. I remember just looking around, like a huge smile on my face at all these inspired guys. And his words, you know, are incredible. He's a great speaker. And when he said, "Hail Trump, hail victory," I just remember standing up with such glee. And really hiling. I did hile myself. Good thing they didn't catch it on camera. So, I did enough there.
Yeah, you caused enough damage there.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't disavow you participated in the hail, which I love.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No,
yeah,
I'm
for years.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I thought that was awesome. I didn't think it was that big of a deal at all.
Yeah, no, like what the hell? I mean, you got these Black Power guys doing their Black Power gesture on national TV, these football players. Why can't I do a white pride gesture? You know, white power. White power. There's nothing wrong with some good old white power. I really like saying that now. I was like, I even started like saying it at the conference. I was like, white power, white power.
Hell yeah.
It was like kind of ironic, but the more you say it ironically, because you have to say it ironically at first, and the more you say it, the more you believe it, and the more you feel that sweet white power. Mm.
Well, you know, I'll just say that there's something very, you know, powerful and I don't know what the word is. There's something about that gesture that just has Jews so terrified, and they don't want us to do it, and there's got to be a reason for it. And I don't, you know, screw it. Why not? I mean, it's our symbol. It's our gesture. It's something that's unique to us, you know. Let's hail away. It is. I mean,
I've
agree.
It
is.
Beautiful and majestic. Even when I made Alfred Heil in my old cartoons in 2007, it was a beautiful gesture for me. It's powerful. We're looking upwards.
It's powerful, right? Yeah. Well, very good. Real quick, before we wrap up, how can people support your work?
As I said earlier, I got that Patreon, patreon.com/EmilyUkus. Only get collect when I produce every cartoon or live segment. And if you want one-time donations, you can just go to paypal.com/, or there, my email is alfredalfer77@gmail.com. alfredalfer77@gmail.com. That's my PayPal. And you guys have been so generous. I have never experienced this amount of being welcomed with open arms and a movement. I guess it's good, because if you guys didn't like me, then I would be fucked. You know, I risked everything for nothing.
Cool. Very good. Glad to hear that. Glad that people are supporting your work. I think it's very important. And I think you got a very bright future ahead of yourself. So.
Oh, thank you.
Keep up the good work. We'll have to do this again. There is a number of topics that I had written down that we just didn't even have time to get into. But that's okay. This was a good conversation, I think.
Yeah, this was solid. I'll absolutely come on again.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Emily. You take care, and I will be talking to you soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.